Hey everybody, and welcome to the Infinite Capacity Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Morton, of Think to Thrive Coaching, where I specialize in helping moms in midlife reach your full potential in health and fitness, relationships, and career goals. I empower you to overcome the mental roadblocks and obstacles that can sometimes get in the way of achieving amazing things. I'll be showing up here on the regular to inspire you and teach you about harnessing your own infinite capacity to achieve the dreams and plans that you're passionate about. Whether I'm sharing powerful stories or interviews, teaching you useful skills and tools, or pushing you to dig deep and ask yourself hard questions that will help you grow, the goal of this podcast is to help you discover your own infinite capacity for creation and productivity, and to support you along your journey toward success and self-fulfillment. Now, let's get started with this week's Infinite Capacity Podcast. Hey, everybody, and thanks so much for being here with me today. Wherever you're listening to this podcast from, whether it's your car or while you're cooking dinner or running or walking, I'm so grateful to you for your time, and it's going to be a really important topic for us to dig into together today, and that is the topic of hope and how hope can lift us up in the darkest of times. And I want to start off by telling you a very personal story. In 2008, my husband and I were beyond thrilled. We were delighted by the wonderful news that we were expecting our third baby together. We'd always wanted three. And I had already given birth successfully to two healthy baby boys, and I felt supremely confident, honestly, maybe a little overconfident, that the third time would be the charm, and that maybe it would be our easiest experience yet. However, much to our surprise and then disbelief, this third pregnancy turned out to be incredibly difficult and full of complications. In the beginning, I began to bleed, and we discovered that our baby's placenta had attached itself in the exact wrong position, and the placenta was partially blocking the neck of the uterus. My doctors diagnosed it right away as a placenta previa, and they began to scan me frequently to see if this placenta previa was moving in the right direction as my baby grew bigger and bigger. Ultimately, they placed me on bed rest at home as the baby grew larger because they were so concerned about the potential for life-threatening hemorrhaging. So that was pretty tough. And if, as though that weren't enough, there were also multiple signs that the baby might have a chromosomal abnormality. And these signs kept popping up on ultrasounds, and ultimately we were asked to meet with genetic counselors who told us all about our baby's risk of a variety of syndromes. To top it off, our little jumping bean in there, who had no idea how much of a ruckus she was creating on the outside of the womb, well, she really liked to spin and twirl. And she managed to wrap her umbilical cord around her neck once, then twice, and finally three times. Three times is not normal, and so the specialists ordered that I be hospitalized because they were so worried that the baby could suffer a fatal cord compression. And while I was hospitalized, she managed to spin herself a fourth time in the wrong direction. So our doctors made the difficult decision that they would deliver her the very next day by an urgent C-section 6 full weeks before her due date. Our daughter would enter the world at 34 weeks, and this would be the first major surgery of my life. This entire time was very emotional for me, as you might imagine, especially because I was the mother of a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old boy, both of whom needed me, and I couldn't get even out of bed to play with them or take care of them, to get them a snack. I can still remember the little step stool that was placed next to the side of our bed so our 2-year-old could crawl up and cuddle next to his mom because I couldn't come to him, even when he was sad. I lay flat most of the time and I read endlessly and I tried to wrap my mind around what was happening to us. I hadn't yet discovered life coaching or thought work. My brain was all over the place. On any given day during those months between the 4th and 7th month of my pregnancy, I might feel worried and anxious, or maybe I would feel overwhelmed, or cheerful and confident. It really just depended on what news the doctors had for us at our latest ultrasound, which we were now getting weekly and then twice a week. And on top of all of this, my elderly father, who I adored, was dying of dementia. Daily life for me had become a lot like a soap opera. At least it really felt that way. Through all of these huge ups and downs, one of the major things that sustained my husband and me was hope. We never lost hope that our daughter would be okay, that she would survive extreme prematurity in the best way possible, that I would make it through the pregnancy and the surgery without hemorrhaging or worse, and that in the end we would somehow become a healthy family of 5. American journalist and author Norman Cousins once said that the capacity for hope is the most significant fact of life. He wrote that hope provides human beings with a sense of destination and the energy to get started. Psychologist Shane Lopez, PhD, and author of the 2013 book Making Hope Happen, writes, "Hope doesn't relate to IQ or to income. Hope is an equal opportunity resource." In Christianity, hope is one of the 3 main theological virtues. Many people going through extreme trauma cite hope as one of the key factors in their survival. Hope is kind of a big deal. But what is hope? What was this feeling that helped my husband and I get through some of the longest and hardest months of our adult lives? John G. Allen, PhD, a psychologist at the Menninger Clinic in Houston, says, "Hopefulness is not optimism, and it's not wishing. Hope is the motivation to stay in the game." Others say that hope is the steadfast belief that things will get better. Far beyond a wish, hope is closer to faith. It's closer to a certainty. Being hopeful is good for you. Studies show that hope is associated with a lot of positive outcomes in various situations, including increased happiness, better academic achievement, and a lower risk of death from all causes. The late Dr. Charles R. Snyder, PhD, also known as Rick, a Wright Distinguished Professor of Clinical Psychology at the University of Kansas and the editor of the Journal of Social and Clinical Psychology, was a pioneer of hope research. In 1991, Snyder and his colleagues defined hope as a positive cognitive state based on a sense of successful, goal-directed determination, along with planning to meet those goals. It's the motivated pursuit of goals and the total expectation that the goals can be achieved. Dr. Snyder's model of hope, still looked to by many psychologists today, has 3 parts. They are goals, agency, and pathways. His theory emphasizes goal-directed thinking, where a person uses both pathways thinking and agency thinking. Agency means our ability to shape our own lives. It's the belief that we have the power to make things happen and the motivation to reach the outcome that we desire. Pathways are how we actually get there to that outcome, the routines, the plans, and the necessary motivation that together allow us to achieve our goal. Snyder wrote, "A rainbow is a prism that sends shards of multicolored light in various directions. It lifts our spirits, and it makes us think of what is possible. Hope is the same. Hope is a personal rainbow of the mind." Research backs this idea of hope lifting human spirits. Many studies have shown that people who express hope in the outset of a situation later show lower levels of both depression and anxiety. Randolph Arnau, a psychologist at the University of Southern Mississippi, along with his colleagues, reported that hopeful people have a greater sense that life itself is meaningful. Hope can also be a strong predictor of feeling positive emotions. When faced with a crisis, hopeful people are much more likely to take proactive actions that will help them deal with whatever they have to. According to Dr. Dale Archer, medical doctor and board-certified psychiatrist, plus a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association, his research has shown that if a patient, an individual, or a victim has hope, they are far more capable of recovering from trauma. Lost hope, on the other hand, is demoralizing, and it can even lead to a shorter lifespan. Dr. Archer writes that victims of major events such as natural disasters can be divided up into two different types of physical survivors. They end up either as psychological victims or as psychological survivors. Strikingly, this result does not correlate with status symbols like money or education, and it also doesn't connect to how much they actually lost in the disaster or how many loved ones have died. I want you to really think about this and apply it to any trauma that you, my listeners, have been through in your lives. Did you end up as a psychological victim or a psychological survivor? Dr. Archer explains that a psychological victim tends to be past-focused. They often express pessimism or a passive outlook, whereas a psychological survivor tends to be future-focused. They often feel more active. They're more optimistic. They do grieve, but then they also push forward with their lives. This is something we see in life coaching very frequently and significantly. Two clients may both book a session with me for similar reasons, such as a traumatic breakup or divorce that they did not initiate themselves. One woman finds herself locked into the mindset that her life is suddenly over, that the marriage was all that mattered, and that her best days are behind her now. The other woman will process the same grief and anger, but she stays focused on her future and the future of her family, especially of her children. She sets goals for herself to become the woman she's always wanted to be, to go after the promotions she's been waiting for years, or to travel to countries that she's always wanted to see. She does not perceive herself as a victim. Instead, she chooses to look at this negative experience as a new beginning. As a coach, my work is to help my clients, especially the ones who may be stuck seeing themselves as powerless or the victims of circumstances that were beyond their control, to shift into a survivor mindset. I get to help them restore their sense of hope. But how do we restore hope and nurture it back after surviving a trauma? If you today are struggling with a lack of hope or the need for more hope, here are some strategies that you can try. First, Dr. Archer recommends that you focus on your purpose, a cause that is beyond yourself, or focus on a loved one or a higher power. This can correspond with discovering your why, the reason that you get out of bed every morning. Next, he recommends that you nurture gratitude. What are you thankful for today? And lastly, he suggests concentrating on those that you love and those that love you. Other researchers suggest that another good way of generating hope is to get a good laugh, as a bout of genuine laughter often raises spirits and makes people feel more genuinely hopeful. Also, try staying future-focused. Envision a specific goal for yourself in a way that makes it feel real. Then, work toward that goal and create new pathways toward it, like taking a class or rewriting your resume. When you're done, plan for contingencies. It's healthy to look for and find multiple solutions to a problem and multiple pathways to achieve the goal that you're aiming toward. Finally, don't be afraid to let go of old dreams to create new goals so that you can create a brand new future pathway for yourself. Back in 2009, when the perinatology team informed us that to save her life, our third baby would be delivered by emergency C-section at 34 weeks, that she would spend a long time in the hospital and that she could suffer lifelong effects from extreme prematurity, my husband and I had to dig really deep. Our carefully written birth plan was suddenly no longer an option. And our overall life plan itself, which was to raise 3 healthy kids, to travel the world, to work hard, to play hard, this suddenly also looked as though it might radically change or disappear. We held on to hope and the belief that somehow, in some way, we would figure out how to deal with any and all challenges that were barreling rapidly in our direction. My husband surprised me right before our daughter was born with a beautiful brown dress covered in colorful flowers that he had purchased all on his own in a little girl's size 2. And I couldn't help but laugh out loud to see this absurdly large dress in his hands, many, many times bigger than what a premature infant who was heading into the NICU would possibly be wearing for years. But he smiled at me and he said, "I have faith. I believe that our daughter is going to be fine and that someday she will wear this dress." Hope pulled us through those dark and uncertain days. Our daughter, who weighed in at only 4 pounds the day after she was born, and who stayed in the neonatal intensive care unit for weeks, is now a healthy, bright 11-year-old girl, nearly as tall as me. She herself is a beacon of hope and joy, every day looking intuitively on the bright side of life. If our family can get through this, you can too. So consider, no matter what's happening in the world all around you right now, despite the COVID crisis and the protests and the election and the fires and all of the everyday crazy, how can you grow a little more hope today? Hope is worth hanging on to. As Nobel Prize winner Desmond Tutu once said, hope is being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness. And that's what I have for you this week. Okay, well, I will be back soon with the Infinite Capacity Podcast, where I will continue to share inspiring stories and interviews with you and strategies and tools, learning and coaching for all of my listeners and clients out there so that you can harness your own potential and bring your own dreams and plans into reality. If you like today's podcast, would you please consider leaving a review for the Infinite Capacity Podcast on iTunes or Google? And if you'd like to learn more about how you can work with me, Andrea Morton, visit my website, www.thinktothrivecoaching.com, or you can follow me on Instagram or Facebook at Think to Thrive Coaching. I'm wishing you a healthy, thriving mind and body. See you next time.